Good morning. You're tuned in to Listen Local, the bi-weekly webcast from your neighborhood news source, Mission Local, brought to you via BFF.fm. Protest season is upon us. In our first segment today, we'll talk about the two local actions we followed in our reporting yesterday and Tuesday, and some of the unifying themes among them. After that, we'll mourn the loss of yet another local media organization. The Bold Italic closed last week, apparently because its parent company, Gannett, pulled support. So stick with us. If you want to weigh in, you can do that on Twitter, where we are at MLNow. I'm Laura Juanes, here with Dan Hirsch and Lydia Chavez. How are you guys?
Morning.
Buenos dias.
It's warm today, huh?
It is. Hace mucho calor.
Sí. Yeah, that's about the extent of our Spanish.
That's not true.
Yeah, okay, a little bit more.
That's not true.
Okay, Dan, we're sending you out on interviews now.
All right. So first this morning, let's focus on what brought people to the streets yesterday and Tuesday. Each had its unique theme. Tuesday, it was about stopping police shootings, and Wednesday was about the minimum wage. But I think there's a larger frustration you can observe in these protests. Anger at inequality, income disparities, racism, classism. Will we see these issues blended into the protests to come during this protest season? Lydia, what do you think?
Whoa, I think you're going to see a lot more of it. I think I was surprised, actually, because the protests in the fall and in the winter time were very, very small in the Mission. And over Black Lives Matters, which really surprised me, because we have some very, you know, important cases here that have happened and incidents that have happened here. But this last one was much larger to begin with and sort of built throughout the day. And I think that they're getting a lot of sort of momentum from the success of, for instance, you know, the $15 an hour wage movement, a lot of backing from very prominent economists. And that's interesting to me, and how this is all coming together, both the police brutality, the minimum wage, inequality. It's sort of one, and they're all joining forces.
Yeah, and you're seeing this in the organizations that are present and are making themselves known at the protests, too. I think in a lot of cases, there are representatives from organizations focusing strictly on one issue, like income inequality or you know, race equality and things like that, come together in these protests to say, you know, the shootings that we're seeing of people by police are an extension of the inequality that we deal with every day. I mean, one example of that is how the violence, the police violence protests have sort of now melded in the Mission with gentrification protests, under the assumption that police violence is a result of trying to gentrify and trying to clean up certain parts of the Mission. I'm not totally sure we're seeing evidence of that, but it is, you know, another example of how these issues are becoming one. And I wonder also if that means that they will become bigger as a result, more inclusive, bring more people out to the street, you know, get more people who are angry about different things expressing that anger at the same time, so they're more visible and more audible.
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about these protests in terms of, like, in their relationship to Occupy. And it all feels like sort of a big arc. Like, a lot of the sort of strategies are sort of similar to Occupy. Like, the rhetoric is sort of similar. And I wonder if, like, we had this moment at the very beginning of Obama's presidency and the very end of Bush's presidency where it felt like, whoa, like, the systems in place do not work for average everyday Americans. The people with the most power are the most to blame for financial institutions collapsing and the role they play in working class people's lives. And then, you know, several years later, like, there hasn't been substantial change around financial structures and larger structures. And I wonder if, like, the upsurge of unrest, like, really has to do with, like, a sort of a grander disappointment. I mean, that's, like, very big, and I don't know, like, there's probably more reasons locally.
Yeah, you know, I hope so. Yeah. I really hope so, because I think the thing that most people can get behind, because the most people are affected by this, is inequality, you know, income inequality or wealth inequality, however you want to measure it. And that's something where you can relate a lot of these issues that are bringing people to the streets to that, I think, reasonably. And I also think that, you know, a lot of people could could have something new to say about that. And a lot of times in these protests, we hear the same thing over and over again. And I think with a wider base of support and, you know, a wider base of outrage, I guess, you could get new ideas and new momentum.
I think also something very, very different that from the Occupy movement is at least the minimum wage group, they have a specific goal.
That's true.
And that really focuses the movement. And it brings in, you know, a very diverse group of people. I mean, at the protest at the McDonald's yesterday morning, there were all these young African-American women who've been working at McDonald's all through high school and now into college. And they're smart, articulate, and they, you know, see the injustice. And they're surrounded by, you know, middle-aged white men who have also landed at McDonald's for whatever reason. And I think you see in each of their stories why there is, you actually wonder why there isn't just more outrage. The difficulty of living in this area on a very, very minimum income is very tough. The other thing I think that's key is the very much putting it on the table and framing their argument in terms of you are subsidizing McDonald's.
Yes.
This is not a free ride. Mm-hmm. We may, you know, scrape by on our small little income, but know this also, we are costing you money because they are all on food stamps or some sort of government subsidy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that you're right that sort of singular, clear goal with a lot of, hesitant to use the word scientific, but research backing also brings in, like you said, prominent economists. I mean, Robert Reich, right? I mean, is a huge factor, I think, in the success of these protests. Or, well, you know, message, clarity of the message.
Right. Hmm. And it's not only Robert Reich, it's Stiglitz, it's, you know, Nobel-winning economists.
Mm-hmm. Well, people who have some kind of credibility who are saying, look, I am not in this situation, but from my expertise, nobody else should be in this situation either.
Right.
It's not just the people whose lives, you know, it's not just the people who are struggling who are asking us to let them stop struggling. This is a real problem and it's affecting you as well, bystander.
And there's a certain sanity to their argument. I mean, not only, you know, it was interesting. I was reading Reich's blog in which he, and you can see that the city's going for $15 an hour, San Francisco and then Seattle are sort of learning from one another. And I think San Francisco graduating it for all businesses at the same time became problematic for small businesses in San Francisco. So Seattle has done, you know, for big businesses, a five-year period, and for small businesses, a 7-year period. So different. And Reich says in, you know, his thing that you need to take in consideration how this is going to impact small businesses that might not be ready for such a big jump, which we've seen here in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. But even yesterday in talking to some of the protesters, because I said, you know, some of the small businesses in San Francisco have complained and, you know, they acknowledged that, yes, there may be a problem and maybe adjustments have to be made, which was interesting to me. It wasn't like an extremism. It was like, we believe $15 is doable. We want to get there, but we're also like, there are other considerations.
Was there any backlash? Because there's, in San Francisco, already concrete plans to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour.
Backlash in what sense?
I mean, was anyone like, okay, guys, you can stop now. We already have this.
No, because I think it's, you know, first of all, it wouldn't be bad to have it faster for any of them. And I think also it's, you know, the other surrounding cities don't have it. Oakland, Berkeley. Mm-hmm.
So it was more representative of kind of the Bay Area, not just San Francisco.
Right.
Yeah. I think the other thing that makes that particular protest and that particular demand more interesting is that there is a good chance that the outrage or the frustration or the sentiment goes much deeper, but that a lot of the people for whom that's a really personal and important issue just can't go out and protest because they need their minimum wage hours.
Right.
They need to be working.
Right.
And
right.
Through the daily slog of working, I don't know, 3 different minimum wage jobs, you're not going to take off a
Tuesday
morning.
Right, and the horror of all this in their lives, you really begin to see is that, you know, the way that people are scheduled by computer now, you know, going in, things get slow, they're just let off. So they're, you know, very few people I talked to yesterday had a full-time job.
Right.
And they would like a full-time job, right. Some of them. Not all of them, but some of them do.
Yeah.
I'm thinking it's interesting in terms of the Black Lives Matter it feels like there definitely is some really intense activism in the Bay Area, but we haven't seen any Bay Area story, police-involved shooting sort of rise to national attention, and I think that's really interesting.
Well, Oscar Grant is.
And we've talked a little bit about
was
it.
Was sort of that's elevated true. By yeah. the film that was made about him, but yeah, you're yeah. right, it, nothing set off nationwide invocations of his name.
Yeah, and I think we've talked about it a little bit here before, but I just wonder if some of the if the protests here are getting any national attention. To me, it seems like they're not.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's interesting. I sort of just wonder if, like, people just sort of expect that out of the Bay Area, so it's not, it doesn't become, a, when, like, a small town in Missouri is protesting and there's, like, total civil unrest, then it becomes a story. But in the Bay Area, it's just sort of part and parcel. I don't know.
Well, in part, I mean, I think that's because we haven't had the video.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Oscar Grant was the last huge case, and that was a huge case, big national case, because of the video.
Yeah.
And in any of the most recent cases, there is no video. There's conflicting reports.
Yeah.
So that makes it less clear-cut and less dramatic. I mean, every other national case has had video connected to it.
Essentially,
get out your phones, folks.
Be vigilant.
Really, though, I mean, I think that really makes an enormous difference in the dialogue. And it's not like this is new. This has been happening for years and years and years. But now that videos are coming out and people are becoming outraged because they can see for themselves the reality of this if they're not involved in it in their daily lives,
mm-hmm.
suddenly it's nationally relevant.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we will continue to report on those protests. And of course, reporters and news helicopters and cameras, generally icons of the media are always present at protests. But what if they weren't in the Bay Area? Independent media are apparently part of a dying breed. The Bold Italic shut down last week. 7x7 has killed its print edition. And of course, there was the Bay Guardians shut down a while back. And then there's us. Are we seeing any patterns in this hopeless trend, and what are we going to do about it?
Well, I actually think I want to correct you on one thing.
Okay.
Rarely, none of those publications, I believe, are you could classify as independent. They're all owned.
That's true.
They were all owned when they closed or cut debt back. They're all owned by like large independent or large
corporate
structures.
Okay. New then, innovative, local.
Yeah, local.
Mm-hmm. We are independent, by the way.
We are independent. So,
but perhaps these other examples are not.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, I think, and the reason that's relevant is because when these corporations look at the bottom line for the ad revenue, say, of like a print magazine or the ad revenue of a lifestyle website like the Bold Italic, they're not seeing enough returns.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the thing that we've seen in many reports is like web ad revenue like cannot support.
Yeah, I kind of feel like ads are a thing of the past. Is that crazy to say? I
mean, ads in terms of sustaining a place, I think that's true.
A news organization.
A news organization.
If you have
they sustain Google and
different.
They sustain
sure.
Facebook,
yes.
But they will not sustain us.
But as we read in a recent report, news traffic alone is practically, I think the phrase was a rounding error in the larger scheme of web traffic. So I think with that amount of traffic, you can't really rely on ads, however expensive you make them. Different, perhaps, in TV, because I think airtime is substantially more expensive and sought after than online advertising. But it does seem like advertising isn't the way to go. So
it's not
what
the way
next?
To go, and it's and you know there are two like there are different levels of journalism here. You know there are the, and there are lots of people competing in the national sphere to just get clicks and numbers and advertising, and some really interesting experiments out there. A couple of them based in San Francisco, and then there is the local sphere, the local citywide sphere, which I think you could say you know Bold Italic definitely was,
mm-hmm.
and the Bay former Bay Citizen SF Gate,
Bay Guardian.
No. The Guardian, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
And The Citizen.
And The Citizen,
I forget, The Bay Citizen started as a project of the New York Times, or...
Well, no, The Bay Citizen started independent, and I think, unfortunately, actually became almost like the bureau for the New York Times.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
And became part of their print edition, because it was, at the time, the New York Times was doing a special page for the Bay Area, and they stopped that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, then there are the local neighborhood experiments, and of which we are one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And
we're like even tinier drilling down into the local, hyper local, tiny traffic.
And I mean, interestingly enough, I actually feel oddly this morning that there's more hope here.
Oh yeah, tell us why.
Like less competition or what?
This is very cutthroat. I mean, even reading, you know, this New Yorker piece about the dismal sort of situation of local news and the bold italic closing, and I feel like people are, it's sort of like ET phone home. People are connected to their communities and interested in their communities and want, and you know, at least yes, want to be. Mm-hmm. And you know, at certain times of their life, they may be more interested in the bar scene, more interested in the history, more interested in the schools. But they are interested in what's around them.
And most of the time they're interested in something just happened down the street from me. It was loud. I don't know what it was. Right. How do I find out now?
Exactly. Uh-huh.
And so, the answer is probably on our Twitter.
You know, our membership campaign, because I think for us and for other local sites, a membership campaign and getting the involvement of those people who read us is survival. And so while, you know, I think we're up to 140 or so members, and we need 500, and we need many more businesses to join on, I'm somehow hopeful this morning.
And I think more and more businesses, I mean, I'm seeing hands outstretched everywhere from businesses that are staunchly local, but that are somehow struggling because it's very expensive to be here, because what they're trying to do is expensive and difficult to pay for, et cetera. But I think membership campaigns are really taking off. I mean, membership models in general, not campaigns. And someone wrote this kind of editorial, I think in Medium, about how the Bold Italic probably could have been saved if they've launched a membership campaign where interested readers pay $5 a month. And you know, I think they calculated it would have taken about 5% of their actual readership to support them.
Yeah, it's tough. And I don't know if that is the answer for national or citywide.
Right.
Because I don't know. I mean, there's just so many opportunities to look at news out there and so many places that people go and really so many fundraisers and so many that I think there has the geographic advantage, having a really close, tight geographic base is a big positive. And I think, you know, as I go out selling business memberships, for instance, I feel like, first of all, I feel like I have a great product. And then the other thing I feel is that if I can actually get to the business owner that they want to join, it just takes me a while to get there. And people are very busy, and I understand that because I feel the same way.
But don't you think a lot of them are just like, oh, our budget is just like too tight. We got this new tax thing that we have to pay to the city, and like, oh, there's the minimum wage. Like, the thing I hear from businesses when I'm out reporting about business and the mission is like, it's so expensive, we can't afford anything. Like, the slightest change in our margin means that we'll close. And maybe I'm only talking to businesses that are closing because that's what
news is. Maybe you have the wrong approach, Dan.
But yeah, I don't know. I think I don't necessarily know if a membership for everybody is appropriate. Like, people can only be members of so many things. And
sure, but it only takes a really small percentage of the actual user base. So you could have, you know, a user base that has very diverse interests, and then 5% of them are members here, and 5% of them are members at last weekend, and so on.
And getting the number, you know, the number of people that write into us on the info box, you know, asking us to do this, to do this, to do that, which I never did before, but I'm reminding them in each email back that, you know, yes, we're happy to do this, but we're not going to be here if you don't support us.
Okay,
and
so
I think everyone, and it, frankly, it's a really good business decision to join Mission Local, because a healthy community and an informed community is a community that has a strong local base and where everyone is sharing the same information.
So we should talk about the other thing that we are going to do to try and ensure our survival, which, of course, I'm talking about next Tuesday's forum. Yeah. What, you guys are like, oh, I forgot about the forum that we're doing.
No. I don't think that's so much to ensure our survival. It's just to get some ideas and talk to people.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah, it's to brainstorm. So essentially, let me explain. next Tuesday, this upcoming Tuesday evening, we're having a Mission Local forum to which you are all invited, if anyone's listening.
Drinks and eats.
And lively discussion about what we should do going forward, what you need from a local news organization. Say, for example, what would be a thing that we could do that would suddenly make you want to join?
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, different, they're different, like, we haven't, I don't think, have done a terrific job, I don't think actually anyone in the city is doing a terrific job of covering government and covering it in a way that people read about it and follow it and actually understand what, you know, a big announcement made that actually then diminishes to almost nothing happening in the Board of Supervisors. And that's really striking to me. So I'm trying to figure out how to do it better. And so we're going to have a discussion about that. We're going to have an open discussion about just anything out there that we're not doing well. We're going to tell you a little bit about how we work and our limits, you know, because we definitely have limits. We probably have more reporters, paid reporters, than any small local blog. And still, we can't get to everything.
And so alternate prompt, if you want to come to this forum, what's something that you might read in Mission Local that would make you want to vote? I mean, wouldn't it be lovely if we were a local newspaper that actually increased the voter turnout locally? Wouldn't that be awesome?
It would be lovely. In the beginning of the segment, you talked about what would happen if local news sites like Mission Locals and others didn't exist. And I've been thinking about that lately. And to be kind of like, tell me why I'm wrong. I'm going to propose something. But, I mean, we live in an age where anyone can telegraph news, right? Like anyone can send out post on Facebook. Like you don't need reporters to get information out. So tell me why, like, we need a local news site.
That's not completely wrong. I mean,
good.
That's fine. Well, for instance, take the story of the bicycle wheel today. The guy writes in, he had his bicycle wheel stolen. He found it at a local market, a Rimjuntos market, and, you know, wanted to know, like, what's going on there? Are there other, you know, bike parts there? And what that takes is sending a reporter out, talking to the police, talking to a Rimjuntos market, going and visiting the market, talking to people there. It takes, you know, to get a complete story. Yes, I can send a notice out, and it turns out to be a really interesting piece.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the amount of work that goes into one story and the amount of intelligence needed to do a story, it's not just sending out a Facebook post.
Yeah. And I'm going to add to that. I'll preface this by saying, of course, reporters with more experience are likely to do a better job. But it's not like, you know, reporters need to be somebody with a fancy degree or a huge amount of education. But someone does need to put in the enormous amount of time and effort to actually figure out what's really going on and to get multiple sides of the story and to talk to a bunch of different people and to make the phone calls and to make the phone calls three more times before somebody answers you. And that is what a citizen journalist probably just doesn't have the wherewithal to do.
Yeah, and to find, I mean, after the fire in the building, to find out what was going on with the tenants. That was an enormous amount of reporting that went on. Looking at public records that you did, Dan, to see, you know, what was going on in the owner's other buildings, mm-hmm. Lou Hawk's other buildings. But every day there's a story up here that has taken someone, you know, time and effort and multiple calls and multiple visits.
And that Mission Local has paid them for that time to do,
that's
which
right.
I think is also a really important aspect of local
journalism. We're a job creator, you guys.
And we may be looking for some new reporters.
Hint, hint, so, hint.
If we don't go under. But we're not. Are going to come forward, support.
Yeah.
Please.
Someone was criticizing us for being slightly desperate in our appeals, and then Lydia wrote back and said, well, that's because we are.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
All right, so join us next Tuesday at Borderlands Cafe at, I believe, 7 p.m.?
7 p.m., Tuesday, April 21st.
At Borderlands. We want to hear from you. If you think also that local journalism doesn't need to exist, then, you know, maybe you can try and defend that. But we'd rather hear your ideas about what you want us to do better and what you want us to do more of and how we can be there.
And maybe
for you.
You know how to do it better. I mean, you know, we have people drop in all the time and do A/B testing on different ideas, and it's fun. And, you know, I think they're both surprised. It's a great place for testing ideas, Mission Local.
Yeah, if you're like
we consider, I consider it an open lab and open to the community. So totally. I'm very interested in people coming in and doing that and, you know, helping us do this or figure out something that might or might not work.
And if you're watching us and you're listening to us or you're, you know, somehow aware of us and you're cringing at something that we're doing, you should come in and tell us about that too. I mean, we're very open to
critiques. Yeah, be nice. Be polite.
Oh, you know. Yeah. Well, we've got thick skin. Like, I think we can
do it. Yeah, some of us do.
Some of us, okay. Alrighty. I think it's time for neighborhood notes, don't you?
Sure, why not?
Okay. You want to go first?
Sure. Yeah, I just want to... I feel like I maybe talked about this before on the show, but like I'm going to just endorse Mission Pool. It's like a great space. It's like one of the nicest pools in the world.
No,
I wouldn't say that.
Whoa.
But it's just... The outside of the building is beautiful. There's like really beautiful murals. It's a, sort of a low-cost exercise. It's outside. It's a pool. And so I like hate it when it's too crowded. So I like feel like I'm in trouble endorsing it because like
you're blowing it up.
Maybe more people will go, but people know about it.
Yeah,
and it's just like so nice to have nice outdoor spaces that the public can use at a relatively low cost. So there's lap swimming and there's also recreational swimming. So if you don't know about Mission Pool, you should, and you should go swim in it.
You should go. Well, what if people don't know where Mission Pool is?
Oh, it's on 19th and Valencia.
In the Mission Playground area?
Yeah, the Mission Playground area.
Yeah.
Cool. Isn't there another pool in the Mission?
Yeah, the
Garfield, which is also nice, but it's not outside.
Not as nice, and not outside, yeah. Especially now that the weather's getting warmer.
Yeah.
Exactly, especially this weekend. I mean, today, you could still work.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah, well...
My neighborhood notes, this is the weekend where you could just gorge on the Mission because there's Earth Day on 22nd Street between Valencia and Mission. There's a Cesar Chavez Day parade. There is a panel at Bryant Street, the old cell space place on development in the Mission in the morning.
Oh, wow. Is it artists?
There's a, yes, with artists there. Mm-hmm. Todd Brown's going to be there from Red Poppy. There's a fundraiser at the Verdi Club where Mission Pie, and you have, you know, the best pie tasters in the Mission, Tartines and Mission Pie and the Three Grace Bakeries. They're all going to be there.
What are they doing exactly?
And then there's a big pachanga at Public Works raising money for Buena Vista Horace Mann. So it's like you could just... Oh, and there's open studios.
Oh, my goodness. So much to do. Wait, what's the pie thing?
You could become exhausted. It's a fundraiser for the San Francisco Community School.
And they're going to eat pie or bake
and they're
pie
going
or what?
To, well, they're going to, yes, they're going to eat pie and taste it and give a blue ribbon winner.
Ah, it's a pie contest.
Cool. Yeah.
Excellent.
Cool.
I was
amazing.
Kind of hoping it would be pies in the face, but okay.
Or pie eating contest.
Pie eating contest. That, sign me
but
up.
But really,
yes.
I was thinking if I didn't have to be on a panel on Saturday morning, it would be fun to just try and do anything and then write a piece on the exhaustion of the Mission.
Yeah.
Going to every event in the Mission this Saturday, a reporter's journey. Cool. Well, I have two notes for you. One is if you are a curmudgeon and you are sick of the trash in Dolores Park, you may have seen that yesterday Supervisor Scott Wiener and Recology and Rec and Park announced that they are going to have a new innovative approach, which is, you guessed it, dumpsters. Hey.
More trash cans.
More trash cans. I mean, technically, I don't think there are going to be more trash cans available during the week, from what I'm hearing. But on the weekend, when there are something like 7,000 gallons of trash, I think I was told, that are being removed from the park. Yeah. There's going to be three dumpsters on Dolores Street for waste, compost, and recycling. And they're going to be staffed by volunteers. So if you would like to advance the cause of the clean park, you might consider volunteering to be a eco pop-up staff member on the weekend.
Everything's a pop-up.
Everything's a pop-up.
Everything's a pop-up.
Even a dumpster is a pop-up.
Such a such a way to market something. It's like, oh, it's a pop-up. And maybe that's what we should do. We should close Mission Local for a month and then do like
just Mission Local pop-up.
Pop-up. Pop-up. Get your tickets now. Stay in line.
All right, and then the other note is that tonight at Cesar Chavez Elementary at 7 p.m., there is a pre-application meeting for a new construction next to Parque Niños Unidos. I cannot pronounce that properly. So essentially the development group that's proposing this project will present it to the community. So if you have thoughts on new housing developments, I believe it's mixed low income and market rate, you can share your thoughts at Cesar Chavez tonight at 7. Cool. Alrighty. That brings us to the end of our show today. You've been tuned in to Listen Local, brought to you by the staff of Mission Local. If you'd like to keep up with the latest from all around the mission, you can find us on Twitter at MLNow or on Facebook, where we are Mission Local SF. Thanks for listening, and that's our show. My hot tops, but don't nobody know. Focus like Cyclops, here to rush the show. Gather info, flow, compatible, prototype, swingman, my hops.